Welcome to Living the Dream Outdoors, the official podcast of Living the Dream Outdoor Properties. We live by the motto, it's not just land, it's a lifestyle. And we live the outdoor lifestyle every day. Whether you're a landowner or dreaming of joining the ranks of those closest to the earth, we're your brothers and sisters of the outdoors. We hunt, we fish, we're stewards of the land. And our Living the Dream team will show you the way to enjoying the land and all the outdoor pursuits it has to offer. Here's your host, Bill Cooper.
Welcome to Living the Dream Outdoor Podcast. Once again, I'm at the National Wild Turkey Federation 50th Annual Convention down in Nashville, Tennessee. Oh my goodness, this is the third day of the show. And, man, I can't see 10 feet for the people. It's kind of like hunting in thick brush. I got a dear friend here on a podcast with me, John Sabati, and he hails from Hawaii. Welcome, John.
Aloha. Thank you.
Hey, so good to see you again. It's about the only time I get to see you. We're either at the NWTF convention or out in the woods hunting turkeys.
Right. It's crazy here. Trying to walk through the aisles is like doing the March of the Penguins. It's crazy.
It really is. Of course, I was here Thursday as well, and I think there are almost as many people here on opening day as there are today. And I talked to several vendors around the floor who sold as much product on Thursday alone as they sold the whole 3 days last year.
Wow.
So some of them are doing really, really well. Well, I got to ask you, John, you've been turkey hunting for a long, long time. And has turkey hunting always been a thing in Hawaii?
Not really, but it's gaining in popularity. And the growth just exploded when NWTF created Chasing 49.
Ah, well, that's pretty interesting. I've thought a few times about coming to Hawaii to turkey hunt, but, you know, that's a long ways to swim.
Yeah, it's very long. It's a long flight. Took us 9 hours to get here.
Really?
Yes.
Man, that's a pretty good haul on a plane. Well, I know you've had my good buddy Ray I out there a number of times, and I've seen him, you know, with the, what do you call them, leis?
Yeah, the flower leis, you know? And aloha shirt.
I've just been waiting to see him in a grass skirt.
No, we're not ready for that. However, there's been a couple of hunters from, like, Louisiana and, I believe, Mississippi. You know, you do a family deal, you need to bring your wife and come take a vacation. So the wife, you know, they laid a law. You only got 1 or 2 days to hunt. And the guys tried, and they weren't successful. And then they asked me, hey, can you help us out? And then the wife said, well, you go with John. It's one condition. You know, they sell the tourist package with the coconut bra and a grass skirt.
It says, yeah.
Get them a turkey. They have to wear that and take a picture. So now I'm on a mission.
that sounds like a real plan.
Yeah.
I tell you, of course, do most people, when they're coming to Hawaii to turkey hunt, is it secondary to the vacation?
Well,
or do you have people come just to turkey hunt?
Well, the guys, they make it a combo, like take a couple of days for turkey hunting and then, you know, a few days with the family.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's an awfully good plan if you're going to travel that far, you know. If I took my wife along, of course, she likes to turkey hunt, too.
That's a good
thing. But I'm sure I'd have to have a few days, you know, for the sights and that sort of thing, because she's quite an adventurer. In fact, in May, she's taken off on a 2.5-week vacation by herself. She's got to go to Montana for a missions trip thing, but that's just 3 or 4 days, and she's going to take another couple of weeks and tour Yellowstone and all the Grand National Park, Glacier, and some of them out there in the West. She's never been out West. I said, well, you better get ready. They mean it when they say big sky country.
Yeah.
Well, back to turkey hunting in Hawaii. So it hasn't been around forever, but is there other hunting available there? Now, you run a ranch in Hawaii, is that correct? Or
I work on a ranch.
Work on a ranch,
yes.
Yeah, yeah. How big a ranch is that?
Almost 8,000 acres.
Wow, that's a pretty good-sized property. And that's on which island?
It's on the Big Island. The island is known as Hawaii, but everybody calls it the Big Island because if you take the other main islands, they all fit on that island.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Well, how many square miles in the Big Island?
Oh, don't ask me hard questions.
Well, you're a hometown boy. You're supposed to know this stuff.
Oh,
of course, I don't know how many square miles in Missouri either.
Well, when you talk to the locals, we talk about hours of driving.
Ah, there you go.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if that works either. I heard two old Texas boys one time, you know, big ranchers in Texas, they're standing at their fence talking to each other, you know, and you know how Texans are. They always got to one-up each other. And one old boy says, you know, it took me from sunrise to sunset to drive all the way across my ranch today. The other old boy, he thought for a second. He said, well, you know, John, I used to have a truck like that. So it's all in perspective, you know.
Right.
But I got to say, of course, most of us here in the Midwest, we're hunting the hills and hollows, and you've been out in the Ozark woods with us. And occasionally, if you go north a little bit, you're getting into field-type hunting and that sort of thing. But you're coming to Hawaii, you're talking about hunting in the mountains, isn't that correct?
Well, you're actually hunting on a volcano. So it can get crazy. You know, it's steep terrain. Someplace like the public land is high elevations. So, you know, the slopes are like almost 45 degrees.
Wow.
You know, and you're talking elevations from 6,000 to about 11,000 feet.
That is incredible. Of course, one of the perennial problems we have hunting turkeys in the Missouri Ozark, you stand on this point and you call, the turkey gobbles on the next ridge over and there's a 1,000-foot valley between you, you know.
Yeah.
So you got to pump a little iron and get some miles in on your legs to get in decent enough shape to be able to chase those gobblers. And, of course, in my history, I've had it happen over and over again. It's pretty wise to go to the head of that hollow. And if you set up before you get to it, a lot of times you can call a turkey around that hollow. They'll, rather than go down the valley and back up, they'll take the long way around and go to the head of the hollow and come back to you. Of course, I've had some bad experiences out on public hunting lands because guys that are wise to the ways of the woods and the turkeys, several times I've had this happen. I'll be calling to a gobbler across the valley on another ridge, and I start down my ridge calling as I go, and I usually always stop and listen and see if that gobbler is gobbling in return and moving. But you get some wise guy hunter, you know, goes to the head of the holler, never calls and sits there and lets you do the calling and then kills your bird for you, you know. That doesn't make me particularly happy.
Sometimes it happens in Hawaii, too.
Oh, I'm sure it happens everywhere, you know. It's just not the most sporting-like thing to do, and it's rather dangerous. You got to be careful about that sort of thing.
Right.
Well, John, you've hunted here in the States quite a bit, and you know, comparing the two, now, what breed of turkey is it you got, species, in Hawaii?
The subspecies we got is Rio Grande.
Rio Grande, okay. Yeah. All right. Just a little comparison between hunting wild turkeys in Hawaii and hunting them in the Missouri Ozarks. Is there anything that's done really differently?
I think so because, you know, sometimes guys will scatter a flock. We don't really do that because the terrain is pretty open. So when they scatter, they can see each other.
Ah.
So they see where each other lands.
Yeah.
So that makes it difficult. Another thing that would be different is locating. Like when we was in the Ozarks, you know, owl hooters, crow calls, we don't have that in Hawaii. So if you come in from the States, you bring your locator calls, they will shock gobble to it. But the problem is it's not a natural call. So, you know, they'll tend to go the other way.
Uh-huh. So have you got something that you use on the Big Island as a locator call?
Oh, man, I got to let my secret out. No, actually, just a good box call, a good friction call, because you had high elevations if you hunt in public land. So a good friction call. But my advice is when you first cast your call, you cast it soft just in case the turkey's close. Because if you call loud, you blow them out.
Yeah, I've done that before.
Yeah, so you call soft. I call soft. I don't get an answer within 30 seconds. Then I hit it a little louder, increase the volume. And then if I don't get any response, I'll move about 100 yards and I'll try again. Then if I get no response, then it's back to the vehicle. I cover a lot of ground. It's a huge area. And you guys call it run and gun. I call it trolling.
Trolling.
So, yeah. So
that's
one,
a good term.
Once I get one to fire, you know, then I'll work the bird. But I have a rule. The turkey has to gobble 2 times.
Ah.
Because of the steep terrain.
Yeah.
Sometimes they'll shock gobble, and then you go set up on them, and they're not interested, or they hand up or something. And hiking in at a steep, high elevation, it's taxing. So Ray, I found out, because I had one gobble below, and he goes, he gobbled good. Let's get him. I got a 2-gobble rule. I hit it again. Didn't gobble. I said, let's go look for another. He goes, but he's down there. He gobbled. Yeah. Let's go. I says, all right. And it was a journey downhill.
Then
we got in, and he did gobble one more time when we got close, but the fog rolled in, and I'm thinking he would be coming in, but I think hens took him away because it just went dead.
Oh, yeah.
And then we had to walk up. I told Ray, you got to take your time because I can't carry you out.
Yeah, no kidding. You need to have some mules for that.
Right back up, you know.
Well, I got to ask you now. You kind of opened up a can of worms here.
Oh, here we go.
talk about hunting with Ray I. Oh, man, he's a wild man here. You know, Dart, you've hunted with him. You know what I'm talking about. How do you handle him in Hawaii? And we can talk about him because he's not here. He's not going to catch up with him real fast, you know. Ray always had the theory that you call till you make their ears bleed, you know. Do you have to shut Ray down a little bit, or is he just call like a wild man?
He's a wild man. but I got to tell you, you know, I've done quite a few national TV shows, and doing shows with Ray is always fun.
Oh, absolutely. Fun. If you don't do anything else, you're going to have fun.
Yeah, and eat. But, But the one thing I like to say, I really appreciate it because he was one of my mentors. So my first mentor was Dick Kirby.
Really?
So, yeah, Dick Kirby was the one that really got me into the spring hunting. In fact, I met him before we even had a spring season. It was only fall. And I didn't know nothing about turkey hunting. So he told me, you run the camera. We're on the island of Molokai. And he had a 10-gauge. And I seen him carrying this big cannon. I never saw a 10-gauge before. And he called, and his turkey gobbled across a big, deep valley. The valley is like, God, it had to be about several hundred feet deep, about over 100 feet. Several hundred feet, not feet, yards down. It's a deep gulch, and across maybe about a little over 100 yards. And a turkey gobbled across, and he started cutting and doing all these noise. I'm looking at him like, oh, this is insane. But that turkey flew over the gulch and landed in front, and he shot it.
Wow.
And I was totally amazed. And he told me, I'm going to teach you how to spring turkey hunt. And I go like, what is that? So he flew me over to Missouri and hosted me and taught me how to hunt spring turkey. That's where I got my first Eastern, was in Unionville.
Yeah.
And that's where I met Big Ernie. You know, I got another story about Ernie, but I don't really want to say because he's here at the convention. Then I met Ray I, and Ray I was the one who taught me the strategies about the pecking order,
right?
You know, what calls to use, when to use it. So on all those hunts, Hawaii hunts, plus, you know, he took me to Missouri a couple of times, to the Ozarks also where I met you, and I learned a lot about locating owl hooting and crow calling, and, you know, so it's a different kind of hunting from Hawaii. It's totally night and day.
Right.
So to be successful in Hawaii, you have to be flexible and be able to go with the flow, because we don't have the 4-pronounced weather seasons you guys have. So the hatch all depends on the weather. Like sometimes you're hunting in the spring, early spring, there's already chicks on the ground. And this year there's going to be chicks on the ground because they already started breeding in early February.
Wow. Yeah. I'll tell you, there are great menace here in the Ozarks. And, of course, you got to be worried about tick-borne diseases anymore. It's pretty serious business. I had Rocky Mountain spotted fever once, but it wasn't all that bad. But I've gotten a habit, usually about this time of year, I start taking garlic, and that will really help keep the ticks off of you. And I always gave it to my dogs as well, my Labrador retrievers. Pretty well kept it off of them as well.
Well, now that you mentioned it, the one thing I want to touch on is we don't have those ticks in Hawaii. We have dog ticks. We have another tick that you find on livestock. But we don't have those ticks that carry Lyme disease.
Oh, that's great.
I ask hunters, before you come to Hawaii, fumigate your turkey vests. Fumigate your hunting stuff so you don't accidentally bring those ticks here.
Yeah, good, excellent point. Hey, we don't need any more ticks. Well, what great fun, man. And I'm sure you've got your turkey season all lined up and ready to go for this year. When does the turkey season start in Hawaii?
It starts March 1st and it runs to April 15th.
Wow, you're going to get to go in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, we're going to be off and running.
Well, I'm envious. I got to wait until April, you know. But, hey, I got a lot of legwork between now and then to get accomplished, you know, because – hey, I'm getting so old, I got myself an e-bike this year. I can cover some territory, man. So I'm going to get out on some of the areas I hunt, run that e-bike, and stop and call a little bit, you know. And, man, is that ever a way to go? But, of course, you know, our conservation department's always a step ahead of us. There's some areas where you cannot run those e-bikes.
Oh.
But, of course, I hunt a lot of private property, too. And, boy, that's going to be the berries on those things. Of course, John, you probably know, last turkey season I had a little throat cancer problem, and turkey season I wasn't feeling too good at all. And I couldn't believe I even thought this, but I thought about not going. But that didn't last very long. And I got on a private farm that I hunt quite often, and I'd gotten a UTV from Cowtown, USA. They'll loan them to me for deer and turkey season. And I'd set a blind up 2 or 3 weeks prior because I wasn't in shape to be chasing birds up and down the hills. So I set up in this blind, and I drove that UTV within 40 yards of the blind in the dark, got out, got my blind. I was really thought I'd just be spending my morning sipping coffee, you know, but I was in the woods, got to listen to the whippoorwills and watch the world wake up. Just as it's getting a little light, I did a real soft tree up. Three gobblers gobbled, not 75 yards out in front of me, man.
Wow.
I thought, is this ever a godsend, you know?
Yeah.
Two of them, of course, went to the east pretty fast, but one just hopped off the roost and went right down over the lip of the ridge to the west. I thought, I got a chance with that old boy. So he never gobbled again, but I just used some soft calls like you were talking about earlier because I knew that bird was close. 20 minutes later, here he come right up over the lip of the hill, walking right straight towards my decoy, but I was shooting TSS shot for the first time, and I wanted to experiment with that a little bit, shooting a 20 gauge, and in 40 yards, I shot this bird, and I'm a huge fan of letting them come in close enough you can see their eyelashes, you know,
yeah.
But I wanted to test this TSS, and I shot that turkey at 20 yards, flipped him backwards, one leg scratched one time, he was done for, man.
Wow.
But what a beautiful hunt, and man, I thought to myself, now, look what I'd have missed if I hadn't made that little bit of effort to get out, even though I didn't feel very well. But I can tell you what, I felt a whole lot better after killing that turkey.
Yeah, you know, you got so many products here. I saw a new product, that pop-up blind,
yeah,
and it's see-through.
Yeah.
So at the Rival booth, I bought one of those blinds because it's insane. It's like a one-way mirror.
Yeah.
So inside, you can see out completely, but from outside you can't see the person in.
Yeah.
Some of these blinds just got like a camel fine mesh, you still can't see in, but that one is like totally concealed. So I bought one because if I have a client that can't walk, or I got like a young kid, I can set up that blind.
Oh yeah.
But yeah,
well, you got to be cautious with those young kids. I can tell you a good story about that too. I had a stepson one time about 8 years old. He was a hyperactive little dude, you know. I took him on his first turkey hunt and had a blind set up. And it's one of those misty, rainy mornings. I knew nothing would probably gobble. So we'd sat in that blind for a couple hours. Of course, he's not going to sit in a seat very long. He'd crawl around the blind, played whatever stick, rock, and bug, and everything he could find. He even had some of these little, what they call them, Hot Wheel cars, you know,
yeah.
He played with in the blind. And about every 20, 30 minutes, I'd give a long series of yelp, that lost call that we use in the fall. Mm-hmm. But I've discovered over the decades that it's pretty good in the springtime. Two-year-old birds would often come to that. Well, it'd been about 10 minutes since I'd called, but I looked up, and here come a big gobbler straight across the field, headed straight to us, man. And I told Cody, I said, get up on your seat real slow. He had a little single-shot 20 gauge. And it got him up on his shooting sticks. Everything's looking beautiful, man. He kept whispering, can I shoot him? I said, no. Let him keep coming. He's walking steadily. He's going to walk right up in our lap, you know. I let that gobbler walk up to about 15 yards. I had already reached over and pulled a hammer back on his little shotgun. I said, Cody, you know how to do this. Just get down on that barrel and kill this turkey. He gets all the way down. He's just about ready to pull the trigger, and he sneezes.
Oh, no.
He went home and told his mom he blew a turkey away. So anything can happen out there with those kids.
Oh, yeah.
But what great fun. I think he had more fun telling the story than he had he killed a bird. Well, John, what are you expecting for your turkey season in Hawaii?
Well, our numbers are actually down. That's what I'll be talking about at my seminar this afternoon. The district that I live in, the last couple of years, we had a lot of rain and flooding. So it really hurt the hatch. In a public area, which is on the other side of the island, the numbers are also low, but it's because of hunting pressure. And what I mean by hunting pressure, well, in the spring, we got to buy tags. We're limited to two or three birds.
Yeah.
In the fall, we have a game bird hunting season from November to January. And in one unit, the main unit that we do spring turkey on, you can hunt 4 days a week with your gun dog, chasing pheasants, quail, chuckers, franklins. But you add in holidays, you can hunt on holidays. So like November, we got two holidays. So now, you know, that's additional days. You're talking 14 days maybe, right?
Yeah.
But when you're hunting with your gun dog, if your gun dog puts up a turkey, you can shoot that turkey.
Really?
That's
interesting.
A gobbler or a hen, no tags needed. So I've been working with a new biologist and telling this is ridiculous because hammering the turkeys, you got a couple hundred guys out there with gun dogs. And, you know, I got a gun dog. I love upland game bird.
Yeah,
hunting.
I do too.
But it's crazy. So the numbers aren't there. So they're going to make changes to the season.
That sounds like a good move.
Yeah. So I tell guys, if you can, I would hold off to 2028, 2029, and, you know, it should be better.
Sounds like a plan. Well, John, if people want to turkey hunt with you on a big island, how do they get a hold of you?
The best way is social media, Facebook, IG, you know, just look up Holo Holo Hawaii. I'm also the Hawaii State Chapter President, so you go to the NWTF, you look up State Chapter President, my contact info is there. I'm easy to find.
All right. So if you don't mind those long flights, hop on. Come to Hawaii.
Yeah.
Plenty of things to do in Hawaii.
Yes, and like now the volcano is really blowing, so if you go to the national park, you know, it's really spectacular. And then we got, like, in the evenings, you can go night manta swim with the giant manta rays. It's really not swimming. They got a big board that you hang on to with shine lights, bring in the plankton, and the manta ray swims right under you.
Oh, man. All sounds like great adventure. Well, I just can't imagine going to Hawaii and not having fun. Well, John, man, it's been great to see you and have you on the program again. I'll look for you again next year.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it. And then we got to hit the mountains one more time.
Hey, I'm closing in on 80, man. You were talking about carrying Ray here one back. Start pumping that iron. You may have to carry me.
We might have to do some freshwater fishing because people don't realize in Oahu, we got Oahu and Kauai, we have freshwater fishing. So I grew up fishing for largemouth, smallmouth, and peacock bass.
You are kidding me.
No.
Now, see, I didn't know that, and I don't know if you know this or not, but back, I think 2012, I was inducted to the National Freshwater Fishing Hall of Fame.
Oh, but, congratulations.
Well, let me explain that a little bit. I was inducted as a writer, not as a fisherman. My wife can outfish me. But, hey, I still love it, and that sounds like a plan, man.
All right.
Righty. Well, thank you so much. We're going to take a short break here, but we'll be right back with more of Living the Dream Outdoors podcast.
Our forefathers gave us a Bill of Rights. One of those is the right to step in the front door of Pond Center, where the faint sound of eagles screeching from on high a bounding purple mountain's majesty browse the walls full of glorious firearms. It's hard not to shed a patriotic tear as your red, white, and blue blood becomes fortified by the sight of true freedom. Pond Center, located 408 Highway 72 East in Rolla, Missouri. Or give us a call at 573-426-GUNS.
Hey everyone, this is Michael Collins with Misty Mountains Guiding Service. I'm here to talk to you a little bit about what we offer. Misty Mountains is a smallmouth and trout-specific guiding service that caters to the Northern Ozarks region. My areas include the Upper Merrimack River, the Gasconade, and a few smaller creeks in the Mid-Missouri area. Whether you enjoy casting streamers to bass, drifting a dry fly, or ripping lips with spinning gear, I've got you covered. Fishing is made easy in my state-of-the-art drift boat raft. I control the boat with ease while you or yourself and a buddy do all the work of catching fish. Besides a great day on the water, I provide all needed gear, a delicious shore lunch, and as much fishing knowledge as you can carry with you on the way home. Spots for the 2024 season are going fast. Give me a call or text today to get your trip booked. My number is 573-823-9057. Find me on Facebook and Instagram at Misty Mountains Guiding Service. It's always an adventure with Misty Mountains.
This is Dan from the White Buffalo Fly Shop, your gateway to Missouri's blue ribbon trout streams and world-class smallmouth water. Whether you're headed to Mill Creek, the Kern, or the Gasconade, we've got the flies, the gear, and the local know-how to help you fish with confidence. If you're looking to sharpen your casting skills, join one of our hands-on clinics. Or if you'd like to craft your own fly rod, build it with us in one of our rod building courses. You're always welcome in our fly tying nights to swap stories, share patterns, and get the latest hatch reports. White Buffalo Fly Shop is more than just a place to gear up. It's a hub for our local community. You'll find us at 605 North Pine Street in Rolla or online at whitebuffaloflyshop.com.
Welcome back to Living the Dream Outdoor Podcast. I'm Bill Cooper, and at the moment, I have Chris Bishop in the booth with me. He's from Buck Chasers out of Illinois. Boy, Chris, when you talk about bucks, you talk about Illinois, what does everybody think of?
Well, probably the first thing that comes to mind is Pike County, Illinois. Pike County, Illinois started it way back in the day, but honestly, anywhere around all those rivers, Pike, Brown, Adams, Schuyler counties, if you're anywhere in that area, we've got big bucks.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Pike County is one of those things that was very well planned.
Oh, yeah.
I have to hand it to them, man. I don't know how guys come up with – when I see something like that, I always think, why didn't I think of that?
That's correct. It's hard to believe that 50 years ago they didn't even have a deer sighting. And now I can't even hardly believe it myself. And there's hundreds of deer now. It's hard to believe that not one, even a doe, you never saw in that area of Illinois. And now it's just overran.
Yeah. Well, that makes a good case in point, what you can do with good management.
100%.
Yeah, and I think, and you're probably close enough, you got to see most of that happen, but I think a lot of the farmers discovered they can make more money off the selling, you know, hunts for big deer than they could raising hay or whatever they raised over there.
Yeah, and it showed, especially since I started my company in 2011. At that time, average land prices were $20,000-$30,000 to get a land lease. Not anymore. It's more than double that now, and it's because those farmers have realized that people pay high dollar because of all the deer and turkey. The turkeys are just loaded in that area as well, but people pay a lot of money to come hunt big bucks and a lot of turkeys.
Well, they really do, but when you look at the society today and people are so busy, and man, a lot of people don't want to make that lifelong investment of getting 100 acres or whatever
right.
for themselves, and it makes good sense. It's a good thing we've got good outfitters and, you know, good ethical people, good land managers mm-hmm. that are in that business, and they know what they're doing.
Yep,
it's just incredible,
true.
You know. I mean, I'm in my upper 70s, and I would have never dreamed I'd ever seen a deer and turkey hunting develop into the businesses that it has. Of course, I grew up in the Boot Hill, Missouri, just across the river from Illinois, Kentucky, and Tennessee, that kind of that triangle down there. And we didn't have any deer or turkey, and it's been a phenomenal thing for me to watch.
Yeah.
For it to not only explode in the state of Missouri, but other states as well.
That's correct.
Well, in your operation, I mean, how many acres do you have? Just tell me about your operation.
All right, so we operate on about 8,000 acres. Now, that's not continuous. We do have some pretty big, you know, 1,200, 1,300 acre continuous, but we're in four counties, like I said, Pike, Brown, Adams, and Schuyler, and we do that so we don't overpressure one certain area. So, we'll hunt You know, we may hunt 2,000 acres 1 week in Pike. The next week we'll be in Brown, you know. And we bounce from region right. or area to area. And we do the same thing when we are doing our turkey hunts. You know, even though we may have a ton of turkeys or a ton of deer in this area, we allot ourselves so many per area so we could keep managing and make that herd grow bigger and bigger every single year. But, we like I said, 2011, we started it. And we've grown from there. We started only running like maybe 25, 30 hunters when I started this. And now we're turning away tons of people because we keep our numbers lower. You know, we want lower numbers but higher quality hunts. And that's what we offer at Buck Chasers.
Well, man, it sounds like you got a great business plan.
Thank you.
Going. Well, who comes and hunt with you? What's the age bracket?
You can start as early as – we got a kid start as early as 6 years old with us. So we've got six-year-old kids all the way up to – 80, 90-year-old men and women that hunt with us. We do a women's only hunt, and the age goes
That's
from 18,
awesome.
18 at the youngest and 75 at the oldest. So it's pretty funny to see. And they all get along great. It's just really funny to see us bring people that have never met, and they become longtime family, basically, by the time they leave Buck Chasers.
Oh,
it's
absolutely.
Incredible to see.
Hunting has just got a great aspect to it that bonds people
really
together.
Does.
I've got an interesting story. My part of the world, I'm in a Baptist association. We got such, most people call them nursing homes. We call them living facilities around the state. All of them's got property with them.
Yeah.
About 3 years ago, one of the guys got the bright idea to start having senior hunts. Now, we call the people in their home, they call each other neighbors.
Yeah.
So we talk about neighbors all the time. We started deer and turkey hunts on these properties. Our oldest hunter was 94 years old.
Oh, wow.
And this old gentleman, Fred, I remember his first name, he'd been an NRA shooting instructor in his lifetime. We got him out on the range, 94 years old now, and we were shooting crossbows. At 20 yards, Fred's three bolts were touching each other. You know?
There you go.
We all, you know, had a big hoorah about it and everything. But the day I had to leave, we had a little breakfast going on outside, and I needed to scurry out of there, so I was headed to my truck, and Fred yells at me, "Hey, Mr. Bill." And I said, "What do you need, Fred?" He's kind of an ornery dude, you know. I figured he's really up to something. I said, "What do you need, Fred?" And he said, "Well, Bill," he said it plain loud enough everybody there could hear it. You know, he said, "If you ever need any help with your shooting, just call me."
Sounds like he had it going on for sure.
Oh, he had it going on. I hope I got it going on like that at 94.
That's right.
But back to your business, you mentioned deer and turkeys both. Now, do you do much with a turkey hunting, or is that just kind of a sideline?
So our deer hunting is mainly where we make our money to pay for our management
right.
programs and all. So our turkey hunt, how it works, we don't charge for our turkey hunts. We do veteran giveaways. We do youth kids. We're going to be part of the Big Dreams, you know, the special needs kids.
Yeah.
We started with them with Philip Culpepper. We're going to start doing some things with those guys.
That's awesome.
But we don't charge for it. So
awesome.
We do a women's only hunt, take four or five women, and it's just to get women, children, and special needs, veterans. So we do it on a smaller scale, but we don't charge anything for it. Our deer hunting, however, yes, we do charge for.
Sure. Well, that's incredible. And you know yourself, you've been in business long enough to figure it out. Word of mouth is still the
yes,
best
sir.
Advertising out there. If you have clients that come in and they're happy, yeah, they're going to tell other people about it.
I'm glad you say that, because that leads me to a good point that we have. So we haven't had to book hunters, even on our deer side, in 10 years straight now. So we're at these shows, but we're selling a waiting list. We've turned into one giant family or a hunting club, you know, because everybody that comes in our camp rebooks and comes back. So it's actually really hard to get in with us for a deer hunt. Some people have been waiting 5-6 years, and we still can't get them home because everybody just keeps coming back.
Wow. Well, you may need to lease up more property and work harder.
I know.
That's just what you want to hear, isn't it? Work harder.
That's right.
Oh, my goodness. Well, it's always incredible to me over the decades. I've talked to a lot of people that have got into the guiding business and that sort of thing. And I've been offered numerous guiding jobs over the years, particularly for turkey hunting. It's not something I ever really wanted to do. It takes a special type of person to want to get into the guiding business and run a business like you're doing. Because I'm still the type, I would be... Well, I want to go too, you know. Yeah. I want to go turkey hunting.
That does affect you. You're sitting here watching deer after deer, turkey after turkey, and you're like, oh, my gosh, you know, I want to be out there. And we do get some time to hunt, but it does slow down. Your main job is to put other people on those deer and those turkey. But I enjoy just as much guiding as I do hunting. And I make sure I get in the woods. Believe me, I'm going to kill a turkey and a deer.
Well, you don't want to lose contact with what's going
That's
on
right.
out there, you know, because, and I got to think that being in your business, that you obviously like people.
Oh, yeah.
I can tell that already, in particular if you're giving programs away. Mm-hmm. You're not only trying to grow your business, you're trying to grow and keep the
yes.
tradition. So I think you're doing the great, great things. But, boy, I do respect you for being in a guide business. And I've helped a lot of young guides through public relations over the years. And I've gotten to the point, particularly in the last 20 years, that I tell young folks like yourself that, you know, I know you love what you're doing. I understand where you're coming from. But another aspect that you really do need to understand, what you're doing is very important to the future of hunting in this country, because you're educating people
yes.
to hunt. And they're going to see your enthusiasm. It's just like new people coming into your operation. It's like they absorb that
right.
you know, by osmosis almost,
yeah,
you know.
Exactly.
And you can see the excitement in their eyes and in their voice and in their demeanor. But it's got to be a tremendous good feeling for you to see that take place and understand that you helped cause that response.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that's, to be a good outfitter slash guide, you have to have that attitude. You have to be able to look at other people, see the smiles on their face, and it bring joy to you, and not jealousy. Because if you're one of those that gets jealous about other people killing, you're going to hate the guide life.
Yeah, I'm sure that's true. Yeah. It that just kind of put a mental picture in my mind. You know, somebody kills, you know, the biggest buck you ever have killed on your place. I think in my case, that's why I can't guide. I think I'd be a little bit envious, you know. I'm better at getting their stories and the photographs.
Some of those deer, like, I do view them as my own, because I've sit there, I've watched them for years, I make hunters pass on certain type of deer, and I want to get them to that 5 and 6 year old stage. Well, you've developed a relationship with that deer, and that's your deer, and I know I could go in and kill him right now, but I
yeah.
want to get a hunter that's paid, you know, us good money,
yeah.
and it's up to me to get that hunter. And when that hunter, you know, whether it be a man, woman, or a child, kills that deer, I mean, the tears that come to that person's eyes, it comes to my eyes, too. So it, you know that person appreciated it just as much as you would have. And in a sense, I feel like I did kill that deer. Yeah, I didn't make the shot, but I studied him. I figured him out. They shot him. But in my eyes, I still shot that deer because I did all the work that led up to it.
Exactly. You get to share the experience
yes.
all the way down to the wire.
Yes, sir.
Except for pulling the trigger.
That's right.
Well, man, it sounds like you got a fantastic operation going on there. And it's... You know, I'm old enough to have dealt with a lot of outfitters, people all the way from Alaska to the Yucatan of Mexico. And I just had a dear friend in here from Hawaii right prior
yeah.
to you, John Sabati. And he works on a big ranch out there and guides. And I've never been to Hawaii. Never. I guess I'm a strange bird. I never had much desire
yeah.
really to go to Hawaii. I went overseas to Southeast Asia, you know. So I'm a little... Leery
yeah.
about flying across oceans and going to strange places, you know.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Even New Zealand, that's one of my favorite places in the world to go.
Yeah.
Started hunting there several years ago, and if it wasn't for the 15-hour straight flight, I'd probably go a little bit more. I don't like being in the air that long.
Yeah, that is a long time. Now, I'd make a sacrifice to go to New Zealand
yeah.
to fish for their big brown trout
oh, yeah.
that
they're
famous for.
Yes, sir.
I love to fly fish, and I've been working for an operation down in Yucatan, Mexico, part-time for the last 15 years, and
yeah.
they got 160,000 acres leased up, you know, ag fields and jungle. People don't think about that mixture in Mexico, but you can drive through 15, 20 miles of thick jungle, and all of a sudden it opens up into a 1,000-acre
yeah.
milo field, you know. Just incredible. But my boss down there is such a fine gentleman. And we literally just hit it off when we first met. And I'm sending him bukus of business down there. We've never exchanged a dime.
Right.
I mean, he pays my expenses. I get to enjoy the jungle camps for...
That sounds great.
up to a month sometime. Yeah, but I think he feels guilty because he'll always, at the end of that, he's got a couple of beach houses. I'll go
yeah.
stay in one of them for a few days, catch up on my work. Then he sends me to a part of the coast, tiny little fishing village. And I get to fly fish for tarpon for a week.
That sounds great.
Hey, man,
it's a good deal.
One of the best
you got
gigs I ever got into. But it's just incredible, and I'm sure you're experiencing this too, that the types of people that you run into in the outdoor industry.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, and we, you're pretty young, but in your lifetime, you're going to see a lot of fly-by-nights that are going to come, and they pretend to be what you are and what you have worked so hard to develop. And it don't take long for people to figure them out, though.
Yep.
So you're going to see lots of them go by the wayside. But I will always, I've talked to young people quite a bit, and I always tell them, just surround yourself by good people.
That's right.
And then you don't have too much to worry about.
That's exactly right. And that's actually even how we do on our people that come to us. We kind of weed out the ones because one bad apple can ruin the whole camp.
So, you're exactly
so
right.
We get rid of that bad fruit.
Hey, good for you. I have seen that happen, man.
Yes, sir.
And I've been in some camps where that's the situation. And one person, whatever their problem is, can make everybody else miserable or run the whole experience.
Right.
I'm glad you brought that up because that's a good point in case. And I've been that way with hunting partners. I've split company with a number of people over the years. Whether it was, I had one guy, I loved that guy to death, but he was, safety just didn't ring in his head.
Oh,
you
dang.
Know?
Yeah.
And I've been shot before, and I don't want to get shot again.
Yeah.
You know? It's not fun.
I say not.
So, anyway, Chris Bishop. Buck chasers in Illinois. If people want to hunt with you and get on that long list you've got, how do they go about it?
All they got to do, we've got our website at buckchasers.com. We have Instagram under Buck Chasers, Facebook under Buck Chasers, and I run those pages, so when they're messaging or commenting on there, they'll be actually talking to me. I don't have it hired out or anything like that. They can contact me on my cell, 865-306-2299. Or just pull us up on their website. Either way, try to get on that waiting list. Like I said, I don't have any spots right away, but we'll make it happen. Y'all give me a holler, and I'll try to see what I can do about getting you in there.
That sounds awesome. Well, Chris, I greatly appreciate you being on the program. Hope
you
won't
so
be
much.
A stranger.
Yes, sir.
Well, folks, from Chris Bishop and myself, Bill Cooper, we're living our outdoor dreams. We encourage you to get into the outdoors and live your dreams as well.
People love a good mustache. People also love a good firearm. The fine people down at Pond Center like both. They have the largest selections of firearms in the area, and with a friendly, knowledgeable staff of hombres to help you pick the gun that's right for you. You could end up riding into the sunset with a gun you love. Find them at pc72guns.com, on shelf, in store, online, or give them a call at 573-426-GUNS. That's Pond Center. Guns welcome. Mustache appreciated.
Captain Brian Wilson runs one of the tightest bow fishing operations in the business. Stainwater Bow Fishing operates out of Jerome, Missouri, and the beautiful Missouri Ozarks. They cover most Ozark streams and lakes. You haven't lived until you've searched Ozark waters during the night with Stainwater Bow Fishing while looking for giant gar, carp, and buffalo. Captain Wilson also runs a second boat on Taneycomo Lake. Call today to book a trip with Stainwater Bow Fishing at 573-263-8016. Again, that's 573-263-8016. Be sure and shoot straight.
The Living the Dream Outdoors podcast is brought to you by Living the Dream Outdoor Properties, The Fly Rod Journals, SmokerBuilder.com, Cowtown USA, Westover Farms, Scenic Rivers Taxidermy, Stained Water Bow Fishing, Scenic Rivers Guide Service and Tours, Huzzah Valley Resort, Devil's Backbone Outfitters, J&J Charters, Kaufman Cove, Alaska, Bean Creek Game Calls, Misty Mountain Guide Service, ASO Guides and Outfitters with Ryan Walker, The Rambling Angler, and Rich's Famous Burgers.
Land ownership is the American dream. Land is the basis of all life. Our wise use of this most precious of resources ensures the survival and growth of free institutions and our American way of life. At Living the Dream Outdoor Properties, we value the traditions and freedoms that land provides us. Every day we seek the solace of a mountain sunrise over traffic jams and smog, the calming silence of a bubbling stream over the sirens of the city, and the quiet of the countryside over the hustle and bustle of the world. We hunt, we fish, we farm. We live off the land. It's our mission to help our clients live out their dreams on the land as we do. At Living the Dream Outdoor Properties, we believe that it's not just land, it's a lifestyle. Join us 5 days a week on Living the Dream Outdoor Podcast as the Living the Dream Outdoor Dream Team explores the most desired outdoor properties in the Midwest and whisks you away to incredible hunting, fishing, and outdoor recreation opportunities. Host Bill Cooper, an inductee of the National Freshwater Fishing Hall of Fame, will be joined by members of the Living the Dream Outdoors team each week as they tell tall tales, unveil tips and tactics, and rub elbows with some of the biggest names in the outdoor world. You'll also find the Living the Dream Outdoors podcast on your favorite social media platforms, including Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and TikTok.